Biblical Approach to Death and Dying. This is Dr. William Ammon. This is tape 4, and we will be looking at some caregiving applications. You remember that wonderful portion of Scripture in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, which says, "Love suffereth long and is kind. Charity or love envieth not. Love vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemingly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails." Wow, I love that portion of Scripture, don't you? Well, my hope is that the information that you're going to find here is going to be an effective way that regardless of whether or not you're a casual visitor or a primary caregiver, you're going to have a way to remember the things that you should be thinking about when you get into that situation. Therefore, I've picked up a little acrostic, L-O-V-E, love, care, C-A-R-E-S. And I've taken that letter rather conveniently. It fit in very nicely. I thank God for it. When you think of love cares, when you come on the scene, you think of L, learn. You think of O, observe. You think of V, visit. You think of E, empathize. You think of the C, comfort. You think of A, allow. The R, respond. The E, enlist, and the S, stick in there. It's my hope that you memorize love cares, and it'll prepare you for instant recall. 23rd Psalm says this, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for Thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, Thou comfortest me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Never stop believing. Always have faith. That's what I'm trying to get across to that loved one. And I'll do it best when I remember that love never fails. Amen. Well, let's look at the L first. Learn. Now, here's my little poem. Whenever you enter the presence of the precious Jesus died to save, it's best you learn a bit before you hinder the love they crave. A little research and a few questions to the right person will help an awful lot to enable you to understand what that person is feeling and going through, the nature of their illness, so that you just don't walk in cold asking a lot of dumb questions which will only make the person feel more comfortable and might even depress them ever so slightly. Well, how about resources? What are some of the resources? Well, you can always ask the doctor. It's a good idea to ask the doctor before you get there. If it's convenient, you don't always have that opportunity. Then there's a wealth of books from medical libraries, local libraries, American Cancer Society, even your online in your computer. Your hospital, your doctor might have some pamphlets. You can call a local hospice. If you're not a pastor, you can ask the pastor for something out of his library. Next, you can talk to a person who has the same illness, but don't count on his experience being exactly the same. Next, you can ask a nurse. Nurses are a wealth of information, some of them, but realize she's only free to give general information, so don't put her on the spot. She might, the nurse of the patient might be very, very slow to give you information because she doesn't want to get in trouble. Next, you can ask a hospice chaplain or just go and ask your pastor. Well, why is it important for a visitor or a family member to learn about the illness before he enters the home? Well, It'll make you feel more comfortable in relating to what you will encounter. And also, it will protect you from looking shocked. This reaction is very embarrassing, not only to you, but to the patient. And it will keep you from saying things which you should not say, like, you look fine, and actually looks terrible. Or, you aren't looking too good. That will make them feel any better, will it? Or, God will have you on your feet in no time. Well, He will, if it's His will. Or it will keep you from breaking down and crying. You could get totally overwhelmed at the sight you're about to see. It will help you also to make the most out of every visit. That's what you want to do. Remember, we're trying to make each day brighter. There's a Sanskrit proverb which says this. It says, look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lie all the realities and verities of existence. The bliss of growth, the splendor of action, the glory of power. For yesterday is but a dream, tomorrow is only a vision. But today, well lived, makes every day a dream of happiness and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. See, that day that you visit is an opportunity for you to make their day better. Wow, what a golden opportunity that is, isn't it? And it'll certainly help if you pray before, after, and continually for the person you love. I've sat there in a whole visit, and I felt my heart was praying the whole time. Philippians 1:9 says, in this I pray that your love may abound yet more and more in the knowledge and in all judgment. Well, why is it important for the primary caregiver to learn as much as possible? Well, first, obviously, it's to help you learn how to deal with this whole new challenge in your life. You're not born with the ability to do the right things or say the right things. And next, you'll be without doubt the most important support person in this whole experience. Next, most of the questions asked will be addressed to you. And next, you'll have to ask questions on behalf of your loved ones, so you must at least know what to ask those who do have accurate answers. Fifth, you will be the major planner and decision maker, so you'll want to know as much as possible. Six, you'll need information to enable you to deal with your own feelings, so don't be afraid to ask questions. You'll often have to keep the rest of the family together and encouraged, so you'll have to be a wealth of information, whether you want to or not. You'll be learning how to be his nurse, comforter, encourager, and God will help you, and He is your immediate support. And sometimes you might find Him to be your only support. You might even need to learn how to rely on others. This you should learn. Thus, you should learn what types of support are available for your loved one. In most instances, you'll have to prepare your loved one for the future. That's difficult. And you will need some basic medical information in order to interpret medical results for the patient, for the family. I'm not saying you've got to become a scholar, but it sure helps if you do some research there. Find a few things out. A real difficult task will be to keep the false prophets away who might prematurely share some miracle cure from getting your love from some source that you really don't know whether you can trust. Get your loved one all filled with false hope. You don't want to do that either. Being well informed, you might be equipped to pray and to minister to him better. Colossians 1:9 says, for this cause we also, since the day we heard it, did not cease to pray for you and desire that you may be filled with the knowledge of His will and all wisdom and spiritual understanding. Well, finally, by asking questions, you'll develop rapport with those who will be able to help in the crisis situation. And pastor, you're forever destined to be a reader and a student. If you refuse to equip yourself for your task, you'll one day have to answer for it. The demands upon your ministry in the area of ministry to the dying will be toughest and most demanding. In my experience, I found myself basically unprepared for ministering to the dying and their family. Sorry to say that. Recently, I heard of a brother who had known for years he was dying of cancer and decided to go to him. I felt like an imposter as I entered the home, for I knew he had a pastor who was a conservative and dedicated to a man dedicated to the Lord's work as much as I was. However, I took a chance and found my very sick brother hungrily accepting a ministry of love, prayer, singing, sharing of the word. And as I left, I asked his wife if his pastor was active in this experience. And she says, oh, yes, in his defense. But then she added, quote, he doesn't do it like you. He just pops in and maybe prays for him and then leaves. And he always says, call me if you need anything. So, you know, and she deduced from that that he's always available. But that was the put off. And I'm not trying to bloat my ego, or I don't deserve that, but there's a great need. Recently, I went to another home and found out that the pastor hadn't been there for weeks, and I was told, quote, he's leaving the church next month, so I guess he's busy, unquote. Imagine, his leaving is more important than the ministry to one who's dying. Worse yet, a member of a family, he had ministered to that family for 11 years. How can you just say goodbye to people you love? Well, be prepared to answer questions. You'll need to learn a lot of things because you'll be asked a lot of questions. You'll need to learn a lot to be aware of your own limited knowledge. You need to learn a lot of what to expect from the illness in order to prepare the family. And that'll be a vital part of your part. One day I learned that a cancer patient who was dying from a lung malignancy had a different death experience than the one who dies of cancer of the liver. I was told that the liver patient will generally slip into a coma, whereas the other might have a more violent end. On that day, I learned that deaths will be different due to the location of the problem. Obviously, you would not want to be preparing a family for a gentle slip into eternity if you knew it could be very traumatic. Reasonable, isn't it? You might want to have some comforting statistics at your fingertips, too. Do you? Well, I think it's good. Well, find out how you can gain access to a medical library. Yeah, that's a great place. And don't forget your daily prayer habit. Dedicate yourself to praying at least 5 minutes of your daily structured prayer for your loved one. Ask God for wisdom and understanding. Didn't he tell us to do that? In James 1:5, if any man lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, and he'll give it to you. He won't turn around and say, you dummy, what are you asking me for? Well, that's my interpretation of James 1:5. Well, you're going to be shocked sometimes to see what God will give you, or just the right thing to say. I would serve you best by telling you what not to say. Don't ever say, I know how you feel. You don't know how they feel. So don't even put yourself into that position. Let me just give you a little basic advice how you can use this information if you are a pastor. I'm strong into trying to develop a care team within your church who knows these things, who you teach from this book. You sit down with my book on how to use the Bible and ministering that terminal ill person, walking your loved one home. I want you to use it and teach some members of your church family how to do this ministry to help you out. You don't have to be a pastor to properly minister to a person. Help your caregivers. Teach people how to help your caregivers. Begin to think and work as a team. Treat each patient as different from all the rest. Let each member add the information he gained at a called meeting. That means have a group of people that are ministering to people and bring them all together for support and for sharing. And do that by beginning with prayer and be sure that every person has a position and a responsibility. Try to have as many of the following care workers as you can. I appreciate the fact that a small church will have limited resources. So you might have one person. But one person being involved in the care of your flock beside you is valuable. Get as many as you can. Primary caregivers, pastors, get a nurse in there. They'll give you a lot of information. Care coordinator there to organize food and transportation for the needs of the people you have. And anybody else you might feel necessary, get those people there and help to equip them to do the work. Don't be too lazy as to do that. But learn how to do that. Get involved in it. Well, next let's look at the O for observe. That means when you get there, open up your eyes and take a good look at what you're looking at. And try to see. I gave some information there considering some encounters people had with Jesus. Sometimes I feel like a giant computer as I try to soak in as much of the environment as I can when I first visit someone. For I know there's a lot of shepherding to do there, but I just can't take it all in. Yet in that brief moment of pastoral anticipation, I know that this is the beginning of the process of walking that person through the shadow, and I want to be ready to do it. Well, here's some things to observe. Here you go. Note the manner in which you are received into the home. Don't be shocked if you find the family out of usual character. Don't take it personally. They're handling something very difficult. If you feel real uncomfortable, say few words. Ask permission to see the patient. If it appears there's still resistance, gracefully or graciously excuse yourself. If you try to force yourself on them, the situation could become very embarrassing for both you and them. Secondly, be as understanding as you can when you visit the patient. Even the medication may affect his demeanor. Of course, you've learned that, though, haven't you? Another one of the learning mechanisms is to learn what medications they're on so that you find out how you can respond to them. If you see a little need, take care of it. I'm going to say this over and over again. Don't ever say, if there's anything I can do, let me know, because they're not going to let you know. You see a need, take care of it. Puff up a pillow, go get some water, give them a little ice cube to suck on. Grab their hand and just pray. Grab your hand and just listen. Just look and see what need is there. Be observative. I'm thankful that God raises up a spouse, a son or daughter, or other family member, or even a concerned friend to closely serve a loved one during the neediest and most vulnerable hours. The job is so great, yet primary caregivers stick it out and do magnificently. I applaud them constantly. The task is great. On behalf of all those who would not be able to say thanks, if you're a caregiver, I'm saying thank you to you. I feel guilty adding the slightest weight to your task. I remember I was interviewed on a TV program recently, and the moderator, TV 60 in Allentown, the moderator, Pat Huber, related to me how she had done such an excellent job of ministering to her loved one and without even knowing it. Because she was observant, she saw things, and she did them and went through a list of things that she did without even knowing it. It was as though she and her folks down there were reading my book then, but they didn't need my book. They did instinctively things that were right. Well, that's great. And I applauded her and told her she did a wonderful job. I don't want to add to your task. Your part is the hardest, but often you'll give until it hurts and wind up getting criticisms from all sides. And that's what's really tough, when the rest of the family gets against you and criticizes what you're doing. I've seen a person nearly exhausted being accused of poor care of the family member. I've seen others accused of trying to get on the good side of the patient just so they get more of the inheritance. The children might be so angry because mom isn't able to care to their every whim that they make life miserable. Maybe you've seen that. You have many sleepless nights with your loved one and many headaches from uncaring others. This is no attempt to discourage you, but the truth is you will have to be tough, caregiver. You might even be feeling some guilt over the fact that she is sick and you aren't. You'll have to be careful not to treat them as a child. You might resent that. Most of your observation will be to hold the family tougher and get some assistance for yourself. If you have small children, you'll also have to keep life as normal as possible. National Institutes of Health support this thought. Quote, the needs of the family as a unit are important, too. Maintain normal living patterns within the family as well as possible. This is important for long range as well as day-to-day coping, unquote. And there'll probably be some feelings your loved one will have that you can recognize. Wanting, you'll look and you'll see he might be feeling helpless. Is anyone treating him like an object? It's bad enough to be suffering, but to be treated as your piece of furniture or machine is very humiliating. Watch how people are responding to him. Another thing to watch for is that he isn't very lonely in the midst of everything. That leads to neglect. It was a wonderful page during my hospice training that I read, and it fits in here. It's called The Elephant in the Room. There's an elephant, quote, there's an elephant in the room. It's large and squatting, so it is hard to get around. Yet we squeeze by with, how are you? And I'm fine. And a thousand other forms of trivial chatter. We talk about the weather, we talk about work, we talk about everything else except the elephant in the room. There's an elephant in the room. We know it's there. We're thinking about the elephant as we talk together. It is constantly on our minds. For you see, it is a very big elephant. It has hurt us all. But we do not talk about the elephant in the room. Oh, please say her name. Oh, please say Barbara again. Oh, please, let's talk about the elephant in the room. For if we talk about her death, perhaps we can talk about her. If we talk about her death, perhaps we can talk about her life. Can I say Barbara to you and not have you look away? For if I cannot, then you are leaving me alone in a room with an elephant. That's a lonely, lonely picture, isn't it? Here that person is the center of everything that's happening, yet no one is addressing anything to them. They're trying to make believe everything is normal and nothing is wrong, and actually they're neglecting. If you see that happening, you observe that happening, you can address yourself to it. When I see the possibility of being the center of attraction, but getting no attention, someone in my reading suggested that some visitors feel so uncomfortable that they focus on the machinery and the support equipment and surround your loved one. And that's how you know that they're not feeling comfortable. Of course, this too is a possible clue that they're trying to ignore the real need. The best way I know to observe is by put yourself in your brother's position and try to see what he's seeing. Know for sure that when you observe things which aren't helping to make him more comfortable, his days more pleasant, then in mercy something should be said. There's a lot of common sense things I wrote within my book that you might want to see. They are like some families have their own way to care for loved ones. Some family have a tough time adjusting to the situation. And some make sure you get as much help for a primary caregiver as you can. And other things. Read those things, a little quote from the National Health Institute. Open up your eyes. See what's happening. See what you're looking at. Look for those clues. Read that little thing on page 95 from the National Health Institutes. Boy, they're very helpful things. Open your eyes. See what you can do. There are things that you can do as an objective observer that others can't see. So open your eyes. And remember those soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. Keep it soft. Keep it loving. Keep it kind. Make sure your timing is right. Open your eyes. See what's happening. Let God use you. Now let's look at the V. Let's look at the visit. And probably I don't have to say an awful lot about visiting, because Jesus said poor and undefiled, pure religion and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction and to keep himself unspotted from the world. That's the pure stuff. A friend of mine many years shared the most humbling question one day. And she said this, Bill, do you know what Pop did when I told him you're coming today? He sat on the edge of the bed and began to cry. Wow, did that humble me to realize that my visit was going to mean that much to him? Sometimes you just don't realize how important your visit your visit might be. Neil Strait sees our reaching out to another in this way. Quote, kindness is more than deeds. It's an attitude, a look, a touch. It's anything that lifts the other person. Charity is twice blessed. It blesses the one who gives and the one who receives. Here's some little quips and quotes. Kindness is a warm breeze in a frigid climate, a radiant heart that melts the ice of fear and distrust and unpleasantness. Here's another. There's nothing so kind as kindly as kindness, and nothing so royal as truth. A friend will strengthen you with his prayers, bless you with his love, encourage you with his hope. These are all little quotes. Here's another. Sometimes it's nearly impossible for heartbroken people to believe that there really is a way beyond their pain. But you can break through and be sensitive and creative as I just want to be with you. Beautiful words. One of the most helpful things we can do for a friend at such a time is to stand by that friend and in quiet confidence assure him and her that this too shall pass. Here's another thing. And even if you can't prevent another sorrow, caring will lessen it. Another thing, I'm here, may be the most two supportive words that you can say. Carl Menninger shares, love cures people, both the ones who give it and the ones who receive it. Dave Wilkerson said, love is not only something you feel, it's something that you do. How, another person says, however, it is not so much their words that help me, but their obvious love and concern. It isn't always the great things that you do or say. I found this strongly suggested in David Watson's classic, Fear No Evil, Another Must for Pastors. John read to me the promise from the Bible and both prayed. And in one sense, it was very simple, but I was aware of their concern and love. My faith was always encouraged as a result, unquote. Now turn your tape over and let's do some more work on the other side.